You are now listening to Black Girl at a PWI. Here at BGPWI, we believe in thriving instead of just surviving. As a global community of Black women in predominantly white spaces or at predominantly white institutions, we are here to remind you that you are seen, heard, felt, loved, and known. Whether you are listening with friends, your partner, while grocery shopping, going for a walk, or commuting to and from work, from us to you, we welcome you home and thank you for listening. Now that we've introduced ourselves, let's get into season 3 of Black Girl at a PWI. All right, y'all. It is your girl, D. Brianna Simone. I am back, and thankfully, I'm not back by myself. We have a guest. Y'all know that I have been trying to not get on here and talk to myself because that's starting to get really embarrassing, and I actually want to interview Black women in predominantly white spaces or from predominantly white institutions or predominantly white environments, and so that's what we're doing. I have somebody here who literally is my girl, means the world to me. I think she's very beautiful and stunning, and she's blushing, and she's sitting in front of me. So this is honestly just a great time. This is Jordan. She's going to tell you more about herself, but what I will tell you about Jordan is that this is my cousin. No, all of my cousins will not be on here because none are nearly as cool as her. Hey, y'all, don't come beat me up now. None are literally as cool as her. But yes, this is J Money. J Money and I grew up literally same town. That's my cousin, both sides. Nothing too crazy. Don't drag it, okay? Don't make it awkward. And we went to not the same elementary school, though we were right up the street. Same middle school, same high school for a little bit. Jordan ended up going to a private school, probably white private school. And would you say like international people, like international students as well? Yeah. So just not a predominantly Black private school. Yeah. In a different city, so not too far away, but if you're from Virginia, in Charlottesville, and we were in Culpeper. And then from there, my girl said, you know what, this has been fun, I'm gonna go to Howard. And so Jordan's on today. Jordan, introduce yourself to the people. Who are you? You know, we're so happy to have you here.
I am Jordan Clark. I feel like intros are so interesting post-Howard because it's like, but my name is Jordan Clark. I am 24 years old. You know, currently a working girl. Yeah. I am a creative. And yeah,
man,
the audience will ask more questions. But yeah, audience. I would like to say that's me in a nutshell at the moment. Mm-hmm. I would like to say I'm a traveler,
traveler,
adventurer.
You do be
jack
everywhere.
Of many trades.
Yeah,
and that's what I got.
Yeah, you, cause so she's not telling y'all the full thing. So she is a jack of many trades indeed. Some of which include, do you want to go ahead and tell us and not be so humble?
Sorry, I'm not used to openly sharing all this. Okay. I paint, I sew, I know how to knit and crochet. I do woodwork, which I have gotten from my granddad. So if you need a hardwood floor, call me.
Yes, Lord.
What else? I call myself a part-time mechanic because at this rate, with my car issues, I can damn near fix
my
car
God.
Myself.
That'll do it.
I do hair.
You can.
I don't know. That's why I say it. I feel like I'm pretty versed in picking up skills.
I agree.
In trades when I need them.
I agree. Jordan did murals around our city. many murals, actually. She might speak to this a little bit more, but she was the DIY girly growing up. And at Howard, you were a part of an organization that was, so you're going to talk more about that. So how about we just get straight into it? What did you study at Howard?
I was in supply chain management, which is in the School of Business.
Okay.
Woo! Go 21 Cab.
Hey, I don't know what that means, but y'all heard.
They know.
Shout out my girl. Okay, so how we're going to do this, we talked literally briefly, like finding out what you do at Howard, cool. We know a little bit about you, but I'm going to ask you, we're going to go through the 3, 2, 1, okay? So how would you describe yourself using 3 words?
Good heavens.
Yeah, that's good.
That's such a question.
That's such a question.
I would describe myself as a polymath. Does the audience
What does that mean?
Okay, so okay. I can give you, like, just because I, too, thought this was a encompassing word, a person of wide-ranging knowledge or learning.
That's good. A polymath. Yeah. M-A-T-H.
I'm about to pick up where you left off. P-O-L-Y-M-A-T-H.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and okay. I feel like, I mean, it's kind of like a jack of all trades, but I don't know. I kind of feel like I am a life learner in the sense I do like learning. Like I said, so I feel like that's the word for me. As someone told me, which I guess could be true, is reticent or just, I guess, a little more observant.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay.
You know, the information doesn't always have to be acted on, mm-hmm.
But at least I got the information.
You know, or observing, and it's not always, I think, particularly, in a sense, I need information, I just be, you know?
I do know, sister. What would be your third?
That's a hard one.
Thank you.
I never know.
My God.
I don't know. This question, and someone's going to be so irritated with me because I can't give just three words.
But that's like, all right.
I feel like, I don't know, my view of myself, it always changes. So the answer can also change very, like, depending on what setting I am. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm a bit of a chameleon. I would say that. So a polymath, a chameleon, and what else did I say? Observant.
I like it. Okay. what are two words you use to describe your life in predominantly white spaces?
I still feel like the observing word will be applied. So I would still say observant and that's hard. I promise y'all, before you feel like your phone broke, the long silence is me thinking.
That's all right. Yeah. How would you, you know, describe your predominantly white, like when you were in a lot of predominantly white spaces, what was that environment like for you, right? Like you said, observant. That's a word you use to describe it. But what was life like as a black girl in those spaces?
I'm trying to find the word for it.
It's okay if you got a sentence.
But I don't know. I guess they all kind of play into observing, but I wouldn't even really particularly say withdrawn, but I'm a little more like
yeah.
Let me, and I don't think it's intentional. I think it's something that I had to come to terms with as I grew up, navigating some of those spaces. But what's the word? Estranged?
That's good. Estranged is a good word.
Estranged, but yeah. It's like you said, I guess, like you said, it's those predominant spaces. Mm-hmm. But, and part of me wouldn't want to isolate it to those times, but like, yeah, I guess that would be the case.
Yeah. Estranged can also cover a multitude of experiences, right? So I know, side note, y'all, we tried recording this like 2 weeks ago. In fact, we did record it. And then I listened back to the recording and I was like, oh, this is absolutely terrible. Like, we can never do this again. But we had talked about our upbringing in middle school and in high school and how, even when we were in the parking lot a couple weeks ago, I was saying, now that I look back on our experiences in high school, I'm realizing that I actually was around so many more white people than I realized. I equated that space to thriving because I was around black women. Yes. And because we made it happen.
Yes.
But I wasn't any less estranged from those white people. It just felt like I was because of the environments I was in. So when I think about the word estranged, if you decide to keep it, it reminds me of that, like, you could still have your community, but maybe you are estranged from the belief systems of the predominantly white space. Maybe you're estranged or feel far disconnected, withdrawn, as you said, from their stereotypes or their ignorance or spaces that undermine your intelligence. Like, That I think that's, yeah, if that's the word you keep, I can see how that shows up for a lot of other Black women in predominantly white spaces or Black girls in those spaces.
Yeah. No, that, I feel like that's a good way to put it, because I think that's when you kind of realize, like, your view, and not in a way where it's like, oh, I'm realizing there's people outside of me, but the way in which people function is a world outside of your own. Like, you really think this way, or that you really don't see other people this way. Like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's like you're a cog in a machine, just not theirs.
Sure.
And the I think the function of not even their machine, but more so like, we see all these other people functioning in society as a part of it, whether like our friend group was mainly Black and whatever, but for them it's like, this is how we, like, there's a bit of a, I don't know, like, I think an unspoken dynamic at play. Mm-hmm. So I guess also reservation plays a role into being a bit estranged, because like, having to, I think after like a lot of instances, you go into those spaces and you're kind of just like, how are we feeling today?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I feel like that's still the word to use, because like, I feel like you put that very well. Like, we had our friend group, but we still had instances outside of our friend group where we were reminded, like, oh,
correct,
type.
Like, oh, okay,
I forgot. No wonder we were all friends because we were Black. That's, I think, it. We just found a lot. Like, we kind of just, you know,
because
I did a complete 360, then I'm sure what my friendships look like in elementary school and, you know, middle school. So I think us being kind of like a found family or found friend group in high school, it was like,
yeah, it's like this works, right?
Because I mean, we welcomed all kinds of people in our friend group.
Oh, we did. Hey. Listen, Angie, if you're listening, I mean, you know, Angie and a Black woman, you know what I'm saying? But our little Latino baddie, like, you know what I'm saying? Angie was that girl. Michelle was around for
her up.
You know what I'm saying? Turn her up. Like, Michelle was around for a minute. Like, you know, we had a couple, no, I can't say we had no white women. I mean, depending on the day, we might have had some.
We ain't discriminate, though.
Like, Saran is from Sierra Leone. Like, still a Black woman, right? But, like, a little bit more cultural.
Outside of the African-American.
Exactly. Experience. A little bit more cultural diversity there. So, now that's definitely real. And I think that I'd love to talk about this on another episode. But just how Black women find pockets of thriving in predominantly white spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a marker of survival, when you have to find a pocket and the space itself is not a space of thriving.
Yeah.
But I digress. What is one word you would use to describe your Howard, or let's say your HBCU experience?
Man. I feel like continuous, because even post Howard, I'm still affiliated with Howard. Like, I would just say continuous.
Okay.
And that's probably not, I feel like evolving.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah.
Evolving is good. Y'all can't see, but I'm pointing my finger at her, because that's, evolving is good.
It's not as high class of a word I feel like I want to pull out of my vocabulary. Hey, but
that's all right. I see the continuous. I see the evolving. And the reason I think, again, similarly to the word estranged, I think I like the word evolving, because when I think, again, about at least about my experience as a Black woman at a predominantly white institution for undergrad, I'd probably say for grad school as well, but for undergrad specifically, I can't tell you that I still talk to any of the people that I was very close to. And I mean, like, professors. So, like, they're not checking on me for, you know, opportunities at the school. I'm not close with no alumni. Like, none. Yeah. I'm not close with no alumni unless they are Black. And unless we went to school together at some point in time, I'm not being connected to resources. Somebody's not hitting me up or finding me on LinkedIn. Like, oh, you went here. Like, let's connect. We're not having homecomings where it's worth coming back to.
Mm.
So the fact that your relationship with Howard or with your HBCU did not die when you graduated, in fact, it just evolved to a new form of community or connection, I think that's a unique experience. I have not heard of other Black women having that experience, but I do think that it's a very unique experience based on, you know what I'm saying, the average predominantly white, you know, white girl in a higher education environment has. Okay.
I concur.
So take us through this story real quick. You went from a private school, predominantly white private school, predominantly white environment, just in terms of the space in which we grew up, like the town. You chose Howard at HBCU. What was the reason for that? Like, what was the bend? And was it, did you have at HBCU in mind, like, I'm going to go to a HBCU? Or was it Howard that was kind of the, I won't say the exception, but like, it was Howard and it just so happened to be HBCU.
I feel like that's more so the thing. Also, I had toured a couple. I had a mix of schools because, quite frankly, I also got an art school.
Sure.
That was like, so in terms of going to Howard and looking at HBCUs, I think, and like, as I've told you before, like, I remember you and your mom talking about it because nobody in my family really went to college. Yeah. And especially hearing about HBCUs. And for some reason, HBCUs among black people, and I feel like we need to carry a really stank stigma.
It does.
Like, when I at first would tell people I was applying, I was going to go there, like, oh, HBCUs this, and you may not get any opportunities, and oh, they're not going to da-da-da-da, like, just like, oh, you could go somewhere better, like, why not a UVA and things like that. And so I feel like comments like that really concerned me, you know, because it wasn't coming from a place like, hey, you know, compared to these schools, maybe they don't monetarily have as many resources in this program, which is a valid concern, of course, when you're applying to school. You want to make sure the program you're getting to. But I think the idea that HBCUs can't get you where you're going is interesting. And it's so funny to hear from those people now post-grad, like, oh, yeah, my niece went to Howard, or mm-hmm. you went to Howard, and Howard this and Howard that. Like, you get what I'm saying? And it's like, but in terms of me going, I applied to my share, but I think in hearing you talk about HBCUs and going on the tours, and I think hearing from people, it just kind of was like, it's interesting to be in a space where everyone is black. So that is not the thing that makes me an individual. Mm-hmm. I'm an individual based on the skill sets that I have. Mm-hmm. And that, I feel like, allows me to thrive as a person because I'm not seen as being black. Being black is a plus, for sure, but I'm not seen as that being my only thing I carry. I'm sure. So many other things.
Sure.
And so it allows you to explore, continue to do more as a person, pick up clubs, try things. And there, that we're genuinely not a monolith in any capacity. Mm-hmm. Like, you're meeting Caribbean black people, Afro-Latina black people, people from, you know, the motherland, from Africa, almost every country under the sun. You're meeting Kenyans, Nigerian, or like, you know, you're meeting all kinds of people.
Yeah.
And those people do all kinds of things. You're meeting queer black people, you know, non-binary black people. Let me tell you something. You're meeting anybody under the sun.
That's it.
Engineers, people who go for dance. And, you know, sometimes people don't always approve of arts as a major. So I think in going to Howard, I was just sold on the idea that, like, hey, this is in DC. It's a nice school. I'm surrounded by people that also look. So it was like, I don't know. It wasn't like I was hard bent, like, I'm only going here because everyone's black. It was like, this is a nice school, and it's also a plus that everyone mostly is black.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it was for me. And when I was applying to other schools, I just knew I did not want to be in a predominantly white environment that would somehow cultivate or, what's the word I'm looking for? And I feel like I use it often and I can't think of it. Would uphold, I feel like, certain classism or other things that I feel like can transpire like they do in boarding school spaces. So for me, and especially going to a large school, like a large PWI, you can get really sucked in and being lonely. And so I just feel like for me, I know that I just did not want to create that environment again. But I mean, hey, I applied to some of them though, like, so.
Amen.
Can't say I was foreign to it.
Yeah. But I love what you express, because I feel like that is the, how do you say it? Like, the epitome of thriving almost. It sounds like, imagine field day. Mm-hmm. Okay. And like field day, you're breaking like the mold of we go to class every day. Like imagine middle school field day. Like when we had that day and it was the last day, like last day of school, last 2 days of school.
Drawing chocolate on the ground. Like,
you see what I'm saying? Pizza. You're doing stuff that you would not normally do. That's not normally a part of the structure, the system that is public school education. And doing that, you are going outside. Like instead of doing classes, you are playing on the playground. You are being able to explore more things. You are being able to hang out with different groups of people that maybe you didn't when you were in these set, you know, these set classes. Mm-hmm. You have a different schedule, like all of that field day. You are eating different foods. Like you're, like you said, doing chalk. You ain't doing chalk inside when it's math and geometry. Like that's not going on. So I imagine it. In terms of like, this is, the structure is not built on boxing you in, but instead it's built on giving Black people especially the space to not be boxed in and to explore where you would want to be, right? Like to explore without restriction. Because when I hear, you got some non-binary folks, you got some people who go into school for dance, you got some people who, you know, they may go and they may join like Greek life, right? Like mm-hmm. Black Greek life. You got some people who are going for fashion or people who are going for supply chain, like all these different things. You might have an entrepreneur, a doctor, a professional dancer, mm-hmm. and a model and you know, all these things in one class. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what class.
They may be one like, person. I met a few people like that. Bio major person. That designs clothes and is non-binary. You may meet an engineer who minors in piano.
My God.
And also has a bird club.
Right.
Like, and I love that. Because, correct. And also, sorry.
No, you're good.
But it's like, it's interesting to meet people like that, especially someone where my hobbies, I think growing up, were not always like having a coin collection. Yeah. Like, it's like.
Girl,
I tell somebody,
give me that quarter.
Me being like, can I see your quarters real quick? What are you doing with that? But like, so I think for me, I think, and I'm sure you experience this, often being boxed in because I'm like, I want to try this, I want to try this. Or me being like, yeah, I make clothes. And someone's like, well, why didn't you go to school? Because I also like other things. Mm-hmm. Like, I genuinely also like, you know, the whole engineering aspect, like building things, which still ties into fashion because you're literally designing something, you're doing math, you're building something different. Yeah. But it was just interesting to meet other people that had hobbies outside of their career or were able to merge
exactly
parts of their life without feeling like, well, I guess because I'm going to be a doctor, I guess one of my hobbies is I should also pick up a language and I should also be doing this, and this on the side that makes sense to be a doctor versus mm-hmm. none of this has to make sense.
That's it.
I could have a rollerblade club on the weekend.
That's it.
And do X, Y, and Z on the side.
Yeah. It literally does not make sense to the culture, kind of what you said, the systems of capitalism, the systems of greed, the systems of classism and racism, where it says you can only, all those isms say you can only be this. Mm-hmm. You can literally, A and B, Black and white, like you can only be this thing. And it sounds like how you even describe your HBCU experience, right, is like the culmination of everybody getting out of whatever box that they have placed themselves in, or that rather they have been placed in, because to your point earlier, HBCUs have a stigma. It's getting a little bit better now, but it also depends on mm-hmm. what class are you part of, what, you know, stuff like that. But a lot of those boxes that even a lot of people have been put in have came from our grandparents or mamas and cousins. It's coming from the Black community of topics on gender, topics on what type of Black person you are, mm-hmm. how culturally acute you are, no, you can't go to school for dance, who paying all that money, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. And so it seems like if I make a decision, this might be dragging it, but I think I just think like, man, for somebody to say, I make a decision of the HBCU, I feel like that is so countercultural in a very beautiful way, because it says, I make a decision to not be boxed in. Mm-hmm. Because no one HBCU experience is the same, because no one Black person is the same. And so literally HBCUs sounds like the epitome of, we are not a monolith, versus at predominantly white spaces, maybe you, and you get with a white advisor or a non-black advisor, or even a black advisor who may have grown up in white spaces and they are used to the system of that institution, I'm literally not allowing you to be a dance major and a piano minor. I'm not allowing you to, I'm not approving your courses for this, for bio and for fashion. Like, 9 times out of 10, depending on where you're looking, a lot of predominantly white spaces aren't even offering half of the majors, minors, concentrations that you just listed off also. And so it seems like it's just this, I don't want to say promised land of exploration, but it seems like it is to a degree, right? And which is why even your relationship with it now is constantly evolving, because you're always finding somebody who wants to connect and be like, man, I went to Howard in the 80s. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, what was your experience like, you know? So mm-hmm. I just think that's really beautiful.
It is. I just met this old man at the Civil War. My granddad did the plaque for them building the monuments for people who kind of took part in like the Civil War and stuff and the history that's being erased around here. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, you went to Howard. And I'm like, like, you'll just find somebody. Yeah. Like, my niece, my so-and-so. But you made a good point where I think with HBCUs too, it deconstructs this notion that my talent, my smarts, my anything only is credible by attending and getting a degree from a predominantly white space. Ooh. Like, my talent and my como se dice, intelligence mm-hmm. is not defined by who taught that to me. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, I find that to be the case a lot.
Sorry, y'all. I had to move the other camera we got to her face.
I just find that's what I think happens when a lot of people talk about, oh, you could have went to this university, as if someone can't flunk out of UVA, someone can't flunk out of Harvard. And not because you flunk out that makes you any different, but what I'm saying it more so is that because I'm able to get in those spaces, you're only, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. those are the only proofs yeah. of knowledge, proof of life. I right. mean, I've met people that didn't go to school at all, and they're like one of the smartest people I've ever met.
Correct. It's kind of like, if I am not in close proximity to whiteness or validated by whiteness,
or they deem as smartness in white spaces.
Correct. Then I'm not smart, or I'm not intelligent, or I'm not yeah. accomplished, or I'm not experienced. And it's quite the exact opposite. Like, yeah. it's very, as I said, like, it's very countercultural to say, you know, I don't need validation from y'all's system and how y'all do things, because proximity to whiteness does not validate me.
Hey.
It's literally me actually doing the work and getting the knowledge and whatever else. And it does not have to happen in your predominantly white system.
Nope.
That's good.
It does. It really doesn't. And even the curriculum at Howard, I think, like, you're required to take an Afro-American class your wow. freshman year, or you have to take that course before you leave. And that can encompass, like, or I think, like, for example, they talk about, like, hip-hop. You have art in certain decades, how art relates to gender, like, black women. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, there are so many classes. And, like, when you said it's, like, a promise. Like, I met somebody who was a music therapy major.
Music therapy.
Yes.
That eats, I fear.
And some other stuff to the point, like, because it's, like, you can kind of create your own degree by, like, combining stuff. Like, oh, wow. I've met some really cool people. Mm. But, like, even their courses that they offer, there, it's interesting.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Because I feel like I'm learning a lot of new stuff that I did not know about HBCUs. What are some misconceptions? And we can do this about HBCUs in general. We can also do this about Howard. We can do both. Mm-hmm. What are some misconceptions that you feel like a lot of people have about HBCUs?
I feel like one, especially with Howard, is it's solely a party school and, like, nothing gets done.
Mm.
And okay. Obviously that perception has changed because now, you know, the VP, and I think people see the talent that comes out of it. But I feel like now at any school, you party a little too much.
Sure.
Your grades are going to go down.
For sure.
You know what I'm saying? So it's managing your work life. But I think that's one thing people at Howard, like, their work life balance was insane.
Yeah, because to be out, you know what I'm saying, and you're going dumb at on U Street
Thursday, 6 p.m., And you've already turned in your 25-page paper. Hey, you're on Canvas actually right now.
You a young professional for real. That's what I'm getting.
Hey. But I feel like that's one misconception. And another one we kind of touched on is the value of the curriculum.
Okay.
Is what I would say. Okay. Happens a lot.
In what way? Like, people don't value the curriculum?
That people don't think they're teaching much worthwhile there sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Or just, like, you know how they, or, like, schools ranking, like, if I say I was an engineer at, let's say, Harvard, that everybody seems, if I'm an engineer at Harvard versus, say, I'm an engineer at Howard, I think some people will think, so I don't, misconceptions they have. I feel like it's the usual, and we kind of touched on them, that just they aren't worthy of someone going to. And, like, sure. I think we've also talked about that shift in that logic.
Okay, so misconceptions we have, partying too much. Right. Misconceptions we have. Well, take me through them again. Misconceptions, like, if you were to say top, like, three.
Solely just being a party school. I think the value of the curriculum, and I'm more so thinking about that somebody outside that's completely out of touch looking in. And that the name is just kind of because of the people and, like, you know, celebrities they may want to attach to, which, hey, sometimes I do drag that a little bit, but I think the student life there really carries Howard.
You know, something that came to mind, And it's when you said you were like that. That's kind of starting to shift because, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris went there, you know, and stuff like that. And it made me think, like, and I've seen some of this happen outside of HBCUs, but kind of in within our community and predominantly Black spaces, where it's like, see, look at this person. Like, we can produce greatness, and it's like, right, but look at yourself. You are an example of that greatness. Even if you don't become the vice president, even if you don't, you know, run this $1 million company, even if you don't buy real estate, even if you don't become one of the top, you know, like, donors to, yeah, the top donors to the school, you, I won't say especially if you go to a HBCU, but just talking about HBCU students in general, you are an example of that greatness. And I feel like a lot of times Black people can, even in our effort to promote HBCUs, we can kind of do it in a way like, you know, look at Vice President Kamala Harris. You know, like, she went to a HBCU. She did amazing. It's like, right. And so did your cousin who's up the street.
Hey.
Who went to a HBCU, and they have a renewed sense of self. So did this person who went, and as you said, like, you're an avid traveler. You've been to, what was it, Korea or was it Japan?
China,
right.
It was over in Asia.
Neither. Okay. China. You went to, where'd you just go? Paris? Italy? Okay.
Y'all, when I list this, please don't think I'm trying to. Okay, so I've been to China, Spain, Paris, Belgium, Amsterdam, Turks and Caicos. Look, if we're going to cut the bomb when we were 9.
Hey.
Look, my little layover time in Iceland.
Okay. Get added to the list.
Please, no. But that's where I went. Am I missing? No. And then, like, I've been able to do, like, the East Coast. Mostly, like, the South. Part of the South.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. But that's what I'm talking about, right? Like, somebody would compare it. Shout out Kamala. You know what I'm saying? Like, shout out my dog. But, like, somebody would compare it. But it's like, right, but your cousin who went to Howard, like, she did all these things, and, like, these accomplishments aren't defined solely through the HBCU, but they're also not a contributing factor to maybe the empowerment that somebody felt to go out and to explore and to all these things.
You chew that. That's actually okay. A misconception. See, sometimes I have to be prompted.
Amen.
Not like the thought, but, like, you know, sometimes I gotta think.
Yes.
Since I've already went there. That's a good point. I think, like you said, sometimes people tie it to, like, you got all these things from this place, and if you didn't go there, more so that you are now empowered, you had the resources, you had the people to get you where you needed to go. So that's a really fair point to make, because I think that happens often, versus I think people are allowed the space, like you said, to fully bloom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. that's a misconception you could add to the list.
Okay.
And I think it helps, like, if you feel like you're on the outer part. Because, like I said, I'm by, like, I went there, so I'm, like, a misconception. Like, right. I'm thinking of what I stereotypically see.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that's a really good point. And I'm not going to say I didn't gain new skills while I was there, but I definitely will say it gave me the space to further expand. Like, if we take sewing, for example, like, I was doing it, like, most of my life. Like, I was doing it here and there. I wasn't consistently on it. But upon going there and being, like, on my sewing machine, like, I just started doing more stuff because I had more opportunities to do more things. And I also felt like I didn't feel as outlandish by making the things I did because, it's unfortunate to say, like, when you're in a small town, you think you are yourself, like, I had those things, but I don't think I was as ready to, like, the ideas weren't acted on as much,
sure,
I guess.
Sure.
Or they just didn't, well, I mean, I don't need to do this because, like, you know, like, I'm kind of doing a lot and I don't want this. Versus I was there and I was, yeah, so I was doing a lot more. I think it made me find new things about myself. Like, all the things I make, I don't think I may watch a video for a few seconds. I'll be like, okay, I'm going to try this.
Wow.
Or I'll look at something and be like, I think I'm going to make that. Or, like, reference a picture. Like, I don't ever use patterns. And that's something I surprise myself anytime I make something because I guarantee you all of my things, it was the first time I ever did it.
That's wild.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, that's wild. That's wild. Yeah. Okay. But there's a reason that, or I won't say there's a reason that, but I want to look up something because I think you said it right when you said it's not a matter of what did you say? Like, it's not a matter of so much of the space as much as it is in this space. This person was empowered. They were given resources. They were given people who were invested. They were given opportunities, all of that stuff. And at Blackguard at PWI, one of our, like, main slogans is encouraging Black women or supporting Black women and creating a space so that Black women can thrive instead of just survive in predominantly white spaces. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about that, that sounds like thriving, because that could look like if you say, hey, thriving is being somewhere where you are fully empowered in yourself or in your being, or maybe with what you create, whatever. And in that, you are given the resources, the people, the investment, the opportunities to do these things freely, yeah, right? That could look like a HBCU. It could look like a PWI.
Yeah.
It could look like a PWI. It could look like a HBCU. And yeah. So I just put up the definition of thriving. I mean, I'll tell you what AI is saying. AI said, if someone is thriving, it means they are doing very well, successful, and flourishing in their life or a specific area of their life. Some of their examples was, general meaning, it says to thrive means to grow and develop strongly, to be successful, and to be fulfilled. Examples, a person might thrive in their career when they are given opportunities to grow and their talents are appreciated. A business can thrive when it is profitable and successful. People can thrive in their relationships when they feel supported and loved. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild. Like, that the epitome of, and I think that's what Blackguard at PWI specifically represents, the epitome of your fulfillment and your thriving and having a successful life is not limited to or surrounded or shaped by the proximity to whiteness.
Mm. I have something to say about that.
Please.
And I came up with another misconception.
Speak, sister.
Firstly, let me type the misconception down because you know I got a squirrel brain.
Hold Amen. On. Amen. We love a little typey type. Yeah, I just think that's so good. That thriving definition is really sitting with me, guys. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. Some of that thriving is doing very well. Okay, they're talking about cupcake business.
Yeah, no, I would say you definitely can create pockets outside there. Because, like, some people say, I want people to know when I say all this stuff of me leaving. I don't think you have to leave to find these things. I just think I'm genuinely just an exploratory person. But I still did things while I was here before choosing to leave.
Yeah.
You went in. I very much still use what resources I made up my own resources too. Like, but even at my boarding school, I think finding a select few professors or having a few people that gave those pockets, mm-hmm, helped me start to kind of tap into that. Like, I think, shout out Miss Gibson, my art teacher. She was pretty cool. Like, she went to art school. Any idea I had that was kind of, like, off the wall, I was like, I'm kind of working on this, but I'll get back to you. This sounds, like, she was down for whatever. Any medium. And that was something I really appreciated, because she kind of just let me play around with my idea of art. Because I think one of the biggest things, I think, when you're in art is that, and something I continue to have to tell my, when you're striving for perfection, you're not going to get to where, like, you're not making anything. You're procrastinating. Like they say, a perfectionist is a professional procrastinator. And so I think just kind of, I think that helped a lot. Getting me to do things like being on stage and making that dress for my senior year.
Yeah.
Side note, y'all. We used to have a show where it was like you make a dress out of unconventional material, so anything but fabric, so like duct tape, quarters, buttons, anything off the wall, wrappers. But yeah, I didn't do it my first year, but my second year it was really nice. And like I said, being encouraged to try all those things and someone, you know, giving the space to see that through, being in a class with my American Studies teachers junior year, and them wanting to explore hard conversations, exploring Black literature. Because when you're in a private school, they create that curriculum. They're not bound by public school standards of what the state teaches. So they technically don't have to teach critical race theory or anything. But I think having, and shout out Mr. Taylor, Ms. Robinson.
Amen.
They, like, ensuring that they are talking about Black authors in that space, giving Black students who have the space to share their stories, expanding on the stories we choose to tell, learning from us, honestly, I think was really appreciated. And being on dorm and having dorm parents too, that like adjusting to that. I mean, we're living with international students, so all of us, we know you're a minority. And look, shout out Profe. All the people I listen, I still talk to with the, you know, like I talk to them now.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So like, and even if it's not, look, I'm terrible at communication, but they do know. Same. We still talk now. Occasionally. But I think that's what I appreciated, because I encountered teachers like talking about subjects. I wrote a paper one year about the history of Black hair. And I remember in art, even when I wanted to explore topics like that, like I had a teacher before and she was kind of like, well, do you really need to, like, the topic of like, do we need to make this a thing, or like, do we, like, what about this? And having teachers be like, that's a bit touchy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so with her, it was like, hey, what do you want to write about?
Okay.
What do you want to make it about? She still has my paper to this day.
Wow.
That was 6 years ago.
Wow.
If not more. And so it's like, and that was talking about, you know, law bans against Black hair, how society, you know, demonizes, and all of these things. We were in class, was reading a book, there was an N-word. She was like, what is your comfortability when we read this? In reading this, like them asking the students, you know? So I found that to be, and I feel like I strayed from the question a little
bit. Hey, sister, that's all right.
But when we were talking about, oh, my experience just, since I didn't go to predominantly white college, being in that space in high school, I think you may find your spaces few, but when you find them, I would say focus on that and less of the discouraging part. Like, wow, I am such a small number in a sea, and versus at least I have. I guess that's what it is. So
yeah.
I think in those moments to have people like that, that kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good. I think I never ended up pledging like Greek, like D9, but when I was in high school, it was because I had, she wasn't even a teacher. That girl was a counselor and her name was Miss Mays. I think it was Miss Mays. Shout out. shout out. Not gonna listen. Shout out. She might. Hey, you never know. But she was an AKA, I believe. And so while I had aunties and stuff like that from down south who had went to school, stuff like that, I got to see her life up close. And so she did that, but she also taught us how to step. And so then I led the step team. And so then I got to learn more about step as an art form in the Black community. This is in a predominantly white school and not a big high school. When y'all hear predominantly white school, please do not think that we had a high school musical type of high school. Like, no, this is still a small high school full of ton of white kids. And here we are, you know, at this basketball game that does happen to be very Black. And we're all Black, you know what I'm saying? And you know, we're stepping. That has not happened since I've left, you know, like in terms of a step team. But the ability to say we are going to show up fully authentically us as Black women and bringing Black culture into this space unapologetically, that was inspired by a Black woman being in a predominantly white space. Mm-hmm. And so, like, sometimes people are those resources. And I think going back as well, when we are encountering sometimes in these predominantly white spaces, people who are used to the system, who are used to saying, well, that's a touchy topic, right? But I'm in college, so I literally should be touching all the touchy topics.
Oh, that was say that was
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that's why I said got it. I was using that more so as a reference of being in a predominantly white space.
Sure.
So all of those professors, like Prove's from Spain, but all the other professors. Well, she was before I got the New York teacher.
Okay.
I did, like, look.
My God.
But, yeah, that was, she was my first art teacher. And,
Got it. So that was in private school.
Yep.
Right. And so I think even that is crazy. Like, hey, guys.
Art in and of itself is a reflection of, like.
Literally.
It's not always meant to be serious, mm-hmm. but in the art you choose to make, whether silly or serious, is probably a reflection in which you are viewing
exactly.
your lens of life.
Exactly.
So
I believe it's an Audre Lorde quote, but I've quoted it all the time. I don't know who it belongs to. I should probably find out. But it's like the personal is political. Like it literally is. And so even my Black self in predominantly white spaces, that is very political. So to ask somebody to not talk about it or to not whatever, it's crazy. And what it sounds like is, you know, again, in HBCU environments, predominantly Black environments, through the structure of a school specifically, there is, not saying that it's perfect, because I know that it has its unique challenges, and I would want you to speak to that in a little bit. But even in that space, as you said, the point of contest is not my being Black. It might be like, hey, no, you're Black, but you have a terrible attitude. Like now it's person, it's character traits. Now it's stuff like that. But at least we have the room to even have those discussions because we can't do it in the world. Like mm-hmm. we can't do it in American society for somebody to sit down and have a conversation or whatever else solely on the basis of humanity as opposed to race.
Yep.
So I love that. I'm curious because you have been a Black girl at a PWI before, and I be trying to tell people, like, America is a PWI. So whether, no matter how many HBCUs you go to, mamas, you still a part of this community.
Which makes it one of my misconception.
Okay. Expound.
I feel like a misconception in a lot of people Howard hate is this idea that they don't prepare you for the real world, or it's like, oh, once you leave, like, you're back to reality. Like, this was some little fairyland for you where it's all Black. And, like, we don't get... I despise that because this idea that, like, we're in fantasy land, like, we're just playing, and then we leave, and it's like, oh, you're gonna see white. We see white people again anyways, because think about it. When we go on certain streets in D.C., there's white people. Y'all play certain white schools. Our internships, we work with white people. Mm-hmm. Our corporate sponsors in the School of Business, white people. The reps they send our school, they usually try to send Black people, but if they cannot, a lot of white people come to our fairs. Mm-hmm. We've had speakers, so we interface with white people still.
Right.
It's just an environment where we are now, you're a majority.
Sure.
I had white professors.
Wow.
Like, and that was another crazy thing. Howard was the first time I ever had a Black teacher in my classroom that wasn't a substitute.
My God.
The first time ever. I had never had a Black teacher.
Hey, that's wild.
Extremely. But yeah, I hate the notion that it doesn't prepare you for the real world, or that, we come with this idea of disillusion after we leave versus more of like, oh, this is what the world could be. Like, mm-hmm. It was really nice to be seen as a person for my attributes, my accolades, and all these things mm-hmm. before I'm seen as... I don't know how to explain it because it's not that someone's direct... Might be a couple people's. Streamline of thought is like, you're Black, you have nothing going for you. But I think people, and maybe it falls into the category of internal bias, that you couldn't fathom that I could have interest or hobbies mm-hmm. that, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was always perplexing to me. Like I told you, when I was at private school, being constantly asked if I was there for basketball.
Right.
How did we? If I was there on scholarship, why do I have to be?
Correct.
You realizing I'm really good at these other things, mm-hmm. or I'm really good at math. Why is that perplexing to you?
Right. That's insane.
And so, and nothing's wrong with any of those people. Like, if you did come for basketball, all those things, people did come for sports, but if I tell you I'm not, why Correct. Is it like, well, why are you here?
Right.
You can only be here for this reason. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing mm-hmm. here? So yeah, I think that falls into that category of a misconception. It's just this notion that like you leave and you're like, down with everybody just because you were surrounded by black people. But I think sure. you're more so in a place to genuinely learn history that you haven't learned before. You're, like you said, you're being empowered. You're mm-hmm. learning all these things. So now when you go back into the world, you're like, all of these injustices.
Right.
And the thing is, people from Howard, it's not just injustice with black people. They speak up about everything from mm-hmm. what's going on in Palestine, like citizenship issues, sure.
Congo,
like the LGBT, like literally anything under the sun. So mm-hmm. it's never just, and even standing up for the teachers, like when the teachers went on strike, child, the students, we was with them. I remember my professor telling me, I said, period, and we're down with them, down with
and
them.
And here we go, yeah.
So, yeah, I thought that was a really weird misconception because at anything, we're overprepared. We go into a lot of spaces right. where I've met other interns and I'm like, you've never had to do this?
Right. Right.
Or just like presentation skills, building presentations. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of people who went to PWIs and they were like, they didn't get their first internship till their senior year.
Correct. Correct. And to that point, that's my point, right? Like public speaking, at least even at my liberal arts school, and I can only imagine what it looked like for UVA, for, you know what I'm saying, like a bigger school, of Virginia Tech or whatever. You were not required to take a public speaking class. Even the intros that you all do as like, you know, for like HBCUs, baby, don't nobody care about all that. Like you ain't a person. Like if you go to a bigger school like that, that's especially white, it is very systematized because that is what a lot of whiteness looks like or is associated with. It's like a system. Here's if the system is predominantly white, the space is predominantly white, the system was created by people who say, okay, we need people who look like us, but who also think like us. We don't have time for all this individuality. We don't have time for all this complexity, which is why the idea of black culture is too complex, kick it out. It's too rich, kick it out. Like, there's not space for complexity, creativity, innovation, new ideas, all of that. And so even the systems in terms of the curriculum is like, we weren't required at a liberal arts college, 4,000 people max, and that's including commuters more than likely. No public speaking class. Mm-hmm. I think once I became a sophomore, junior, we pushed to have, like, you need to have more social sciences as well. No public speaking class. You ain't have to take no class on race. You didn't have to, like, you could literally skate by without any public speaking, without introducing yourself,
what?
Without joining a club, without joining an organization. You're good. You can skate by from beginning to end without any interaction with anybody who was different than you. Literally. You can skate by.
That's insane. I can't, and I would say it's almost, of course, in SMB, they was going to find a reason to make us speak to somebody.
Respectfully.
But, like, even in other schools, you were definitely always speaking. And also, something with Howard, it's one of those things where I don't know if it's, a lot of people who were black students excelled at predominantly in what I found at Howard is you get a demographic of people who are either black kids who thrive in being, they were a lot of times the only black person in a predominantly white space, or they were often predominantly white spaces and came to Howard. Mm-hmm. Or you do have black kids who are in predominantly black spaces. They also excelled and they wanted to also continue to be in black sure. spaces. But I don't know if that's, because I was going to say a lot of clubs mm-hmm. or a lot of activities, they're motivated to be seen and be out. And I don't Correct. Know if it's the nature of, like, me and you.
Mm-hmm.
You're known to achieve and excel, so you want to, like, why would I come here and not? So it's like, yeah. Let me continue to excel, because yeah. y'all excel and I want to excel.
Exactly. Let me do my one.
So, yeah, the fact that y'all could skate by like that.
Right.
Man.
And that's my thing. It's not communal. It's not evolving. It's very systematized. And, like, to be, as you know, as unapologetically black stuff like that, it makes sense why a lot of black people in predominantly white spaces shrink or they struggle or whatever, because it's like, bro, I don't fit this system. And so if the ceiling is here and my natural state is 10 feet higher than the ceiling. Buddy.
Hey, buddy.
This is going to be very hard for me. So I want to pivot with that, right? Like, talks about misconceptions of HBCUs. Are there any misconceptions that you think people have for Black women in predominantly white spaces, or just any misconceptions that people have about the Black experience when in predominantly white spaces or at predominantly white institutions?
Yeah. Well, obviously, I think a big one is this idea of, I don't even want to say a sellout, or just like that you are whitewashed in some capacity. Because, I mean, like, I always think about you and my other friends. Y'all very much still remain extremely Black in those spaces, if not Blacker.
Okay, my God.
I feel like that's a misconception, and something I'll applaud people for is to continue to be in those spaces, continue to take leaps and bounds. Because as progressive, you know, as much of a choice it is to go to HBCU, going to a PWI, knowing that, like, hey,
man,
choosing to take up more space and evolving as a person, like you said, in a system that's not ideally meant for you, like you being president at PWI, man. Baby, hey,
man,
is that a feat?
Yeah. Is that a feat indeed?
Sister General.
My
big sister general. So I feel like that's one misconception. And I mean, there are some people that like, hey, as long as you don't come talking to me about how terrible my HBCU is because you got a Georgia Tech or Alabama Roll Tide, we're good. Yeah,
Roll Tide Roll.
But look, no tea to those school. They just came in
mind. Yeah, no tea, no tea.
But I feel like that's one misconception. Another misconception in those spaces is that you're disconnected from your culture in some capacity. Or like you don't want to. Or I think when you're in a predominantly white space and you transfer to Black spaces, like you're a bit of a pretender or like you need to flex or change. I would say that's one thing. Like I feel like sometimes when I would tell people where I was from, it's like that's where you're from. And it's like, I think we're both Black. We're both Black in different ways. Like, I'm sitting on the back porch with my grandma. We're going to go. Not saying that's exclusive to Black people, but I think my Black people is still Black people.
Correct.
It's different than me, of course, being like, whenever people say the DMV, the V's there. I just know my part of the V is not. Right. But I still listen to Go-Go. My parents still heavily influenced into that. I also still listen to, like.
Hello?
So, I think that was always an interesting experience, and I'm sure you probably also, because you're able to speak to the you can confirm or deny those misconceptions.
I confirm.
Being in a collegiate space.
Yeah, I fear I confirm. I confirm indeed, because as you said, like, I am not less Black because I'm in this space. Like, I literally tell people all the time.
I didn't choose to be born here.
I promise you. I did not choose to be born here. And also, it's like, you know, and I think we talk about it a lot, but I've said it on numerous occasions. I think especially knowing God personally, being a believer, baby, I tried to go to a HBCU three times.
And I know you did.
Okay. Hey, you know.
You sent them out. Shout out Brie, because me, Eli, and Zion, man, she sent her soldiers.
Okay. Food. I sent my soldiers. Y'all do my big one.
Do my big one. I got the degree and Brie's me.
I can't go. Like, I tried to go to an HBCU and God was like, nah. And when I look back, I'm like, man, I showed my call, right? It wasn't to be self-sacrificial. It wasn't to be this martyr. God ain't set me up to suffer. Because when I look back, I'm like, oh, you know, like, ain't no different from high school. But what I was able to do was meet a lot of Black students where they were and say, hey, we're going to provide a space for us here,
like,
because all y'all can't leave. Some of a lot of the Black students that I met, we created this thing called Black UMW. Because I'm not, unpopular opinion, I am not a fan of the whole, we got an HBCU at my
I'm glad you agree with me. Sometimes, like,
baby, no.
Just because y'all all party together.
Okay.
And that's usually my issue with it, is it's solely because y'all are partying together.
That's it.
And that ties into the first misconception, is that solely what we do.
That's it. And it's like, baby, no, like, no. So I've never been that, right? And also community is important. And so I was like, we're going to call this Black UMW. Like, if y'all keep trying to make UMW seem like it, well, it is a white school. There's a black UMW. Hey. And that comes with different culture, a different way you talk to us, a different way you approach us, different events that we do. And so we were like, yeah, we're, you know, we like parties. We're going to do a Halloween party. Like, and it was H-O-L-L-A. We like Halloween. Like, and we're going to get all the black clubs and we're going to organize our own thing, because at our campus, when it was Halloween, all of those white students would go to Virginia Tech. Mm. They go to JMU. And so they'd be gone having a blast for Halloween, dressing up. And we'd be stuck, because I ain't going to JMU. I ain't going up in the mountains with my black self. Mm-hmm. I ain't doing that. You get what I'm saying? So it was like, now we had to create something where we were. A lot of those students, there was a, because of just like funding and stuff like that, there was a program within their high school that only allowed them to go to UMW. It was, mm-hmm. the program was like a James Farmer Fellows or whatever. And so it was typically for black students to be able to go to college. But it was UMW because James Farmer, who was a part of the civil rights movement, taught at UMW.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, so it's like they're there for history, but also if this is their only opportunity they have for a college experience, they get abused as a result because they're not around other black people. So it's like, I was able to be there for them while also making history as the first black woman SGA president ever, okay? Be my one. Okay. And then on top of that, being able to even meet up with some black students and be like, yeah, no, you should go to a HBCU. And pushing them in that direction, because they, half the time, they only settled on this PWI because nobody pushed them anywhere else. Mm. Nobody encouraged or empowered them to be anywhere else. And so when we talk about being in spaces to empower other people to thrive, it might look like here, but it might not. And so let me push you out there. But I don't think anybody ever was direct with me like, oh, you're not black enough. Girl, you could never. Like,
I'm actually phenotypically black all the time.
I promise you, the blackest. Like, so, you know, I think there were things, moments where it was like, y'all don't have, you know, D9 Greek life. Like, y'all don't have, like, stuff like that, I think, contributed to it culturally. How are you all thriving in your blackness? And it's like, because I'm black, so I don't need I don't need NAACP to thrive in my blackness. I don't need a Greek life organization to thrive in my blackness. I am able to thrive in my blackness because I know who I am. Mm. That's it. So whether I go to PWI, whether I go to HBCU, me being a black woman, I'm going to thrive in my blackness, right? Because this is my hair, my skin, the products I use are different. The slang I talk in is different. This AAVE, like all of that stuff. So I would definitely agree with those misconceptions. I think it's very, very charged. Mm-hmm. And I think that divide has, honestly, I think a lot of that divide has happened with just generations before us.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, we don't value HBCUs anymore. I had this one experience and now this is all HBCUs. And then saying, well, I excelled in this predominantly white space. You can do it too. You should only do it here. And that's also, success is not, again, proximity to whiteness. So it's like, I think a lot of the misconceptions have been shaped generationally. And I think now it's on our generation to kind of break up that mold, within HBCUs and PWIs, within like more formal systems of education, but even outside of that, like having a black preschool teacher, like you know what I'm saying? Like just having stuff like that, I think breaks up the misconceptions and it breaks up the stereotypes. But I think there is still a great amount of work to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Yeah, clack that tea.
I'm with you.
Clack that tea. Okay, we're almost done. We're
no
almost
rush.
Done.
No rush.
I'm curious, and we can start to wrap up from here. But what is something that Howard gave you that no other predominantly white space could have?
I think, like we touched on to round out to the front half of the interview, was like a long-standing community. Mm. I continue, like you said, I think most people having an alma mater where it's like you can get job opportunities and all those things, friendships from meeting people. Like, I've been in spaces, I went to your grad party, you said, oh, this is so-and-so, she went to Howard. Mm. Mm-hmm. Find out, not only was she like my class, we probably had crossed paths in some capacity in SMB, because I'm like, I literally almost knew everybody because of the roles I had. So I'm like, I probably met you. But I think that's something it's given me. I've met friends there. I continue to have points of contact there. It's given me, I think that's the one thing. I just know I can always dip back in that pot. Mm-hmm. Like, hey. Mm-hmm. If I can bake on anything with this degree, is this name a little bit.
That's it. Okay. Respectfully.
Just give me a little something, something.
Yeah. The amount of people I've seen on TikTok or whatever say like, hey, if you ain't got no job, whatever, go ahead, wear that Howard, wear that, you know, that Virginia State, wear that Morgan State, you know what I'm saying, crew neck to the airport and see who comes up.
You're not, I literally was at a game for Zion. And I think I had on a Howard hoodie, and this lady was going to the bathroom. She was like, you went to Howard, too. She was like, what was your major? I said, supply chain. She was like, she said she does supply chain. She works for the government. She was telling me all this stuff. Like, I've had plenty of people stop to tell me that. When I tell people I did fashion for Howard, like, I know this person whose nephew does this, and he went to Howard, and this, and this. Or, you know, and usually I'm like, I don't want to just get by for a name, but it's like, I did work hard for that. And I think it's also people know that. Because you went to this place, I know you've experienced, they've molded you to be this type of person to get you to where you're going. Because when we talked about interviews, I've had a friend, she's had an interview almost every year at Howard. She's worked with Slim. She's worked with Amazon. She worked with Disney. She worked
My God.
With, hey, buddy, she's with them now.
My God.
Shout you out, Milan. But I've even people who didn't have intern, who aren't at these big places, weren't like those skills, the type, like they've been able to become these type of people who got in the community, whether they are art teachers, just simply make you a better person. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think that's definitely true. Put you on some Howard merch, you're going to get you a conversation. Yeah,
I love that. It makes me think of another question, because I'm sure a lot of the people who are listening are either maybe some Black women who have went to HBCUs, some Black women or Black girls who are about to go to HBCUs. For the most part, it could be Black women at predominantly white institutions and predominantly white spaces. What encouragement do you have for them who are maybe, because I remember I used to feel this heavily when I would hear about all of the stuff, and I'm like, God literally would not let me go to it. So I'm like, literally, like, what? Dang, like, I wish I could have, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I look at my list of accomplishments, I'm like, oh yeah, this is raw. Imagine if I had these people. Imagine if I had these connections. Like, it would have been raw-er. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm just wondering, like, what would you say to a Black woman who's like, man, I didn't go to a HBCU. I didn't have the information about HBCU. I wanted to go to HBCU. I couldn't. I didn't have money. Whatever else. Like, what advice would you give to them to not feel like it's heavy FOMO and that they haven't missed out?
So, of course, it is a very lovely experience. So, I think it's gonna, for me, I don't want you to think that that's the end all be all to it either. And so, what I'm gonna say is one, hey, baby, you might want a master's or you wanna go to grad school, check them out. Number two is getting connected with those people. I would be at Howard talking about my friends all the time. I have a friend that's at this school and she did this, 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 and this. And I'm willing to connect my friends to those people I know. I talk about my friends from here to my Howard friends all the time. Like, my friend does this thing. You should hear her up about this. Or you really remind me of my friend back home. Mm. Like, and they're so willing, because whether you went to Howard or not, if you are a Black individual who wants to get to where you're going, like, they're not going to be like, you didn't go to Howard. Mm. I don't care. So I feel like connecting yourselves with those people regardless. I know if you were to talk to an HBCU alum, and let's say you were in a work environment, you found out they are, and you're like, I went to a PWI, but like, I'd be interested in you kind of leveraging your mentorship, whatever the case is, to help me. I don't think they're going to tell you no. Mm-hmm. And if they do, that's a little odd. But my advice to you is don't think the experience stopped there and you can't find that anywhere else. Continue to assimilate yourself in places with people who look like you. Create that space for more people like to you. Shout out, girls, right? So I won't let that be it, because even now that I was gifted the experience of going to an HBCU, I think being exploratory and kind of seeing what's out there. Like, that's my biggest thing. Whether you're in an all-black space right now, you are in a predominantly white space. Go. There is so much more to the world. And as a black woman, I think the best thing we could ever do is to be a little selfish and go see the world. Please, I beg of you. It is so much more than your current circumstance. And if you don't have the money, like I said, be a little delusional. One of my friends, her skill is delusional, and it's gotten her a lot of places. So, I don't know if I'm not hitting your point.
No, you are.
To address that FOMO, don't let FOMO weigh you down as a person, because you in that predominantly white space are also cultivating skills. Like, you didn't stop being black in that space. That space just stopped being predominantly black, maybe, but you are still black in any space. So, like I said, create that space for yourself, a pocket. It's not always going to be school. Find activities after school. Find activities in your community, your city. You may go to Georgetown in DC. Cool. I had a friend be a Howard at the weekends. Be trying to be in clubs as much as she could on those weekends. So, I just don't box yourself with what you have, but what it could be. I think continue to think of the world as what it could be, and you will find that you will get more opportunities. And this is honestly also advice I can take. So please don't think I'm Michelle Obama or nothing.
Yeah. That's good. That's really good. And I think, again, right, like, no one path looks the same. So when I think again, you went to Howard, our brothers went to Hampton. Like, I never would have thought the little Negroes would have went to
HBCU. I never
would have thought. Eli went, played lacrosse. I went, played basketball. Like, I never would have thought. Like, and so just knowing, like, no one path looks the same. So I think that's beautiful. I think I had another question, but that might have been it. You did so amazing.
What is it?
What advice would you give to a young girl, let's say she's a high schooler or somebody who says, like, I'm going back to school, or I'm about to go to, you know, Howard or an HBCU in a couple of months in the fall, right? It's early decision and folks should be hearing back from schools. What is some advice you would give them, right? Like, what is advice that you needed before you had went to a HBCU that you would want to pass down or give somebody?
One, try everything, but also don't get caught up in the comparison game. I think something that can happen at Howard or HBCUs is you eliminated racism, but things like classism still exist. Or like being a bit, you meet people whose parents, both their parents went to college, and so they may seem a little bit more ahead of the game. They're decided in what they came to school. They already decided on clubs. They knew people when they got here, or someone's excelling. I think the biggest advice I can give to you is go there, try everything. As long as you are better than the version of yourself you came to, and you won't always be better. Let me tell you something. You're gonna hit a low, you'll hit a high. You'll hit a plateau, you'll hit a high again. Hey, it's going to look very, but you'll come out on the other side strangely perceptive. So my advice to you when you go to HBCU is don't get caught up in the comparison game. Find your people. You may lose people. You will gain people. Find those people. It may be a person. Hey, get connected with the professor. Take advantage of the opportunities they provide. Put in front of you, genuinely. Biggest thing ever, those opportunities, those career fairs, eat it up. Even if they're catering to the fact to meet a quote, eat it up. Hey,
that's so good. You did so amazing.
I feel like I said a bunch of nothing. No, you did. Sometimes I get thought stuck on word loops, and I know I think it's weird when you have constant thought and someone asks your thoughts and now suddenly they like run away.
Right. That's like, oh,
I don't want to. Good heavens. See. Like, I had a good strung together streamline of thoughts of what we, like, I would say when we talked.
Yeah.
And then, like, we're talking and I feel like goo goo gaga. And I'm like, do people from Howard think I'm even talking about anything if they listen to this?
No, this was so good, and I'm so glad you literally, like, came on the pod. Your willingness. I've been trying to do this for 2.5 years. But I'm honestly so grateful. And like I said, there's still so much to unpack. So much I want to do. Even just having these conversations at HBCUs, or there's always something online or on social media where it's a debate, and it's always HBCUs versus HBCUs versus PWIs. And so, like, I think this bridged the gap in a beautiful way because it affirmed Blackness and Black women mm-hmm. in these spaces, in the essence of Blackness and thriving, and yeah. recognizing that thriving can look a multitude of ways.
So, hey, I love that. That's a good thing for them to carry out is that it can be a multitude.
Yeah.
Man.
Thriving in a
multitude. But that argument needs to die. Just get your degree, please.
Just get your degree,
please. Close your mouth, get your degree.
Especially in this day and age. Like, baby,
it's a luxury to go to school.
Okay, he taking them PWI degrees. He taking them HBCU degrees. He taking these programs and them programs. Just get your degree. That's it. Hey, that's it.
You got to go to school. And that, as my boss told me, if she sees on your resume you went to college, that's enough to qualify you.
My God.
You finished and got that degree.
My God. Even if you had to fight your way through.
Good heavens.
Good heavens.
Did you fight?
Did you fight, my sister? Did you fight? But no, thank you so much, Jordan. We love you. Do you want to shout out any projects or anything fun coming out?
Good heavens. Y'all can keep up with me on my Instagram, which I'm sure Brie will tag.
Yes.
I'm always doing a project. Y'all, please don't get me now. I don't be posting them.
She don't post nothing, y'all.
My friend's trying to get on me about that. But, you know, it's a good bit of things coming my way.
Yes,
and
Lord.
Look, I'm going to take the advice I keep giving y'all, and I'm going to take the opportunity.
Amen. That's it. That's it. Hey, y'all. Jordan and I are actually hosting an event called Girls Night In. By the time
And y'all see what I mean? You see what I'm talking about?
Because I actually forget. We're hosting an event here in Culpeper, Virginia. Link is actually in. They should be in my bio, but they're not. So let me fix that. But we're hosting an event called Girls Night In. And so it's from 6 to 9, celebrating Women's History Month, powered by Changing the Narrative Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization here in Culpeper dedicated to helping communities and generations of people change the narrative about our lives. And so mm-hmm. it's going to be a dope event. We're going to have mocktails, pajamas. It's intimate. It's going to be like 30, 40 of us in the building. It's going to be food, Jeopardy, prizes, Polaroids. It's just going
to
be a great
and
time.
And most of all, a panel to address some of your concerns.
Yes,
about things we'll probably have talked about.
Yes,
in
Lord.
This said podcast.
Yes, in this said podcast. So it's going to be a great time. Hopefully, by the time you hear this, it's not too late. Tickets should still be available. But, you know, we'll tag on our Instagram, Black Girl PWI, Jordan and I's social media personally, so you can follow us and keep up with all those updates. But yeah, we love you, Jordan. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you to everyone listening. We will talk to y'all soon.
Bye. Bye.